service. He had taken forestry. And she thought that by all means, she says, go into some agriculture. Go somewhere and take agriculture. That's the coming thing. And I was in love with her, you know, like.
Huh?
And that's what I determined I was going to do. I was going to take agriculture.
Were you raised in a farm?
No.
You weren't,
no,
huh?
No reason why I shouldn't. So we both came here, and I think we had $32.
And you came here without any help? There was no scholarships at all in those days?
Nobody knew we were coming. We just walked in and showed them our credentials, and we didn't even know before we got here whether they'd take us or not.
I'll be darned.
Showed them our credentials and so forth, and they said, okay. And
did you get any help then when you were here? Did they give you a job or anything? Did you work dishes and that sort of thing?
President Pedzi used to help me. He knew that we needed help. And he'd send anybody come looking for to sell things like belt buckles. Salesmen came in and gave us, I don't know, maybe 500 belt buckles. We sell them with Michigan initials. And he gave them to us and left. We didn't have to give him a nickel. And we sold all the belt buckles for $1 each. And we never heard from him.
Never came back.
We tried to contact him through what little information we had about him, never heard from him. And there was about $500.
Boy, that was a lot of money in those days.
Really given to us. Yeah. I mean, that helped us.
Now, all the great players that we had at that time, like Blacklock and Henning and New Miller guys and DePreto and others, they all just came here. Any of them recruited? It was just kind of sheer luck they all happened to show up here.
Yeah, I don't know of any. I remember that one time Malbach was contacted, I think. Uh-huh. I don't know, through somebody. But anyway, he went so far as to come over. This was before he entered Michigan.
Uh-huh.
He came over here, and I talked with him, and some other fellows talked with him. And he says, you know, I like this place, he says, and I like the spirit. And he says, I wish I was going to play football with you fellas. And, but he says, I haven't got any money. And he says, what they're offering me, well, he says, I can't.
Oh, at Michigan, they did have help in those days then, huh?
Help. Vic Pattingill, here, a Lansing man, it was a football player at Michigan, a very good friend of mine. And he was very frank with me about it. How their organization worked and what they did. There was no doubt about it.
Hold it 1 second. Team, right after Macklin left, all of a sudden everything seemed to fall apart. What happened?
After he left?
Yeah.
Well, I think he lost most of his football players, mainly. He didn't, but...
Yeah. Right after that came Summers, and Summers had a winner. He was 4-2-1, I believe, but then the next year it was 0-9, but then this was World War I.
Are you taking this?
Yeah, uh-huh, that's all right. But I'll be very careful. You don't have to worry about me using anything that I shouldn't.
Oh, I see.
I'll be very careful with anything you say, yes. Yeah.
Well, I was going to, speaking about Macklin.
Yeah.
He was not a football coach.
I've heard this other people say, yeah.
Not a football.
Frim left me some notes, and he said the same thing.
The only thing he ever said to me about football was, now be careful. At one time in one game, it looked as if somebody was going to get around my end, but I got him for a loss.
Uh-huh.
When I came in, he said, boy, he says, after the game, he says, be careful. Don't let him get outside. Well, you know. I'd been coached by Hinkey of Yale in high school.
Oh, I
not Frank Hinkey, but his brother Louis, who used to officiate. He officiated one of our Michigan games. Nobody ever knew it. Mm-hmm. He just came over to me and said, hello, Blake, and that was it. He didn't talk.
What did you do then by way of offense?
Offense?
Yeah. Yeah, you didn't have many plays, did you?
No, and that's another thing. We had the same plays in my fourth year that we had when I came there. Exactly.
Never changed a thing.
Our trick plays was a halfback going to the left, giving the ball to the left halfback, and he'd go to the right. That was a trick play. They know.
A reverse.
No smart football.
Uh-huh.
And on defense, Macklin, well, the Oregon game. They came here, and we had the information we had was that they were a wonderful forward passing team. So what little practice against their style of offense we had, Macklin usually just stuck to the same old grind. He'd switch the lines over and we'd just beat each other's guts out, you know. That was the way he built his football team. And if you didn't do it well, he kept you there till you did. Sometimes we'd go over in the bullpen, over in the Ag building after we had our dinner, and we'd start in again, just batting each other. And when it looked as though the offense particularly was doing better than the defense, then he'd call it in. Okay. Yeah.
What happened then in that Oregon State game?
Well,
where we got licked pretty good.
I think it was. Well, I saw the paper.
24-0, wasn't it? The same score.
Was it 24?
Something like that.
I thought they had the score wrong there. They had it by about
I'd have to look it up too. I don't recall.
But I would have said 20-0.
Uh huh.
But we were very badly crippled. Blacklock had a back.
This is right after the Michigan game.
Yeah, the night before the game. I remember I came out of the dressing room and Blacklock was sitting on the steps, tears rolling down his cheeks. He says, Blake, he says, I don't know whether I can play or not. He says, I'm going to try, but boy, he says, my back. Just shook his head. And Gideon Smith had, I know now what it was, a separation in his shoulder. He couldn't raise his arm.
And they didn't even know what it was then, probably.
And he played. Macklin didn't. Gideon Smith played with an ankle. He could hardly get his shoe on, And he just hobbled. Even when he went on the football field,
Was that in another game or this hobbled. Oregon State game?
Well, this is Penn State game Penn I'm State. Thinking of right now.
In 14 up there.
Yeah. That was... I didn't get into that game. I couldn't even catch a football. My neck. They said I noticed I saw one article. It said Miller's found out had nothing but a bump. Well, I had a dislocation. I was out for 8 hours like cold. And then I would keep going out. And they kept me in the hospital in Ann Arbor until Thursday, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday morning. And Doc Griffin, the fellow that took care of us.
He was our team physician, an osteopath, wasn't he?
Osteopath. He brought me back to East Lansing on the interurban. And I was in a state of, I don't know what you'd call it, but I don't think he and I said 10 words. I just sit there like this. He says, he'd talk and I'd just sit there.
This was after that Penn State game?
No, this was after the Michigan game.
Oh, the Michigan
game. I got
game.
Hurt in.
Oh, I see. The 13 game.
Yeah. And just the week before Wisconsin game.
Yeah. Well, you were in the hospital in Detroit. They took you into Detroit, didn't they, the hospital?
In Ann Arbor.
Ann Arbor Hospital.
Yeah, I was hurt over at Ann Arbor.
Yeah, but the one story I saw said that there must have been a mistake, that they took you to a hospital in Detroit. That wasn't right, huh?
Well, I was in there with the same thing in professional football.
Oh, that's something I want to ask you about too, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. First of all, back to the college though. Do you recognize the nickname Kid? What player did you call Kid? Was that Coachy? Did they refer to him sometimes as the Kid?
No, I don't remember.
Because in the 1912 Ohio State game, in the whole CAD, there's reference after reference to just the kid. The kid did this. The kid did that.
I don't know.
And the nearest we can figure by comparing it with a Lansing State Journal story, it appears that they were referring to Gochee as the kid.
God, I don't know.
Do you remember a guy named Chamby? Who was that Chamby? Was that a short nickname for someone, like Chambliss, maybe?
Oh, Cowboy Campbell.
You call him Chamby?
No, but Chamby?
Yeah, Chamby.
Chamby. Chamberlain?
It could be Chamberlain, I'll bet.
He would be in 1912.
Yeah, 1912 against Ohio State. His name popped up.
Yeah.
Say, the locker rooms in those days were in a building, the armory where the music building is now. Now, at halftime, where did the teams go? Did you go all the way back there to the armory?
No. They had a, well, I guess you saw the small place on the baseball field, just a little covered roof over a small...
That little shanty there?
Didn't amount to much.
Little equipment shanty.
Yeah, I guess they kept equipment in underneath.
Yeah.
And that's where we went after, in between halves.
Was there room enough in there for you?
Oh, just one little...
Yeah.
Room didn't take up much.
Where'd the visitors go?
Same, they had one.
Oh, they had one too, back of the stands, where there were two of them.
Underneath the stands.
Uh-huh.
Didn't amount to anything.
You know, there's a funny story about, this was told to me by Lemoyne Snyder.
Yeah.
About his dad, that one time at halftime of a game, this would have, I think in Brewer's day, the president, Jonathan, wanted to go down and say something to the team. So he goes into this dressing room quarters at halftime, and here the team members are passing around a bottle of, malt liquor. A famous malt liquor of the day.
They were passing
around the bottle, and they were all taking a swig. And apparently he turned around and got out of there as fast as he could. He didn't want to see what was going on. You ever hear anything about that?
No.
That would have been before your time, that's right.
Come to training, boy, they were in shape.
How was training out in Lake Lansing? Did you like it out there at that place?
Yeah.
Downey's Cottage?
We liked it very much, yeah.
And you had a field on the mainland, didn't you?
Just a rough little...
How many years did you go out there?
Hmm?
How many years did you go out there?
Two, I think.
Two seasons?
All, yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I think we went out there the following year, but I'm not sure. I don't remember, really.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Oh, you played pro, too, then, didn't you? Did you ever run across Ralph Young as a professional?
I've often wondered, often thought. He's supposed to have played with the Heralds. That's the team I...
In Detroit, is that?
That's the team I went to. See, I didn't play... basketball or baseball in my senior year. I went and played football. After the football season was over, they gave me $500 to play three games.
In Detroit?
In Detroit.
And the name of the team was Herald, H-E-R-A-L-D?
H-E-R-A-L-D, I think.
Heralds, uh-huh.
Pardon.
Talking about playing pro and in Detroit and whether you'd ever run across Ralph Young as a player.
No, not, I don't remember running across Ralph. Mm-hmm. But I remember he was, they had the alumni of the Detroit team in Detroit one time, and Ralph was one of us.
Uh-huh.
So he'd played sometime.
Do you still go back to those old-timers games in Detroit?
No.
I know that some of the guys do that used to play there. Mm-hmm. Say, some of the fellows, DePreto and Gideon Smith, went down and played at Dayton, didn't they?
I never knew it.
I mean, after their senior season in 15.
Oh, after the season.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Oh, I didn't know. I don't know, really.
I wondered if how long they went down there, or whether... Did any guys ever play pro route right while they were playing college ball?
Oh, you heard rumors and somebody went and played somewhere.
But yeah. But you did it very quietly, if you did it at all.
Yeah.
Because it would, in those days, they didn't have hard and fast rules that would have made you ineligible for that, wouldn't it?
Well, I played one game when I was a junior in high school.
Junior in high school?
I played one game at Buffalo, team representing Buffalo.
Yeah.
They were playing a championship game, and they wanted somebody to return kicks. And one of their players came down Tonawanda to see me and wanted to know if I'd like to play with him in the game. And of course, oh boy, that was great.
Oh darn! How much did you get? Do you recall?
I was off. They told me I was going to get $10, and I never got a nickel. I don't know whether it's because I was a little afraid to take money, or I don't remember. But I never got any money for it.
I see.
But I was in there long enough so that they hit me and knocked me about 10 feet into a bench on the sidelines and cracked three or four ribs. That was the end of my...
Well, you were there. Was Ian or Ian Courtright, was he around here then?
Oh, yeah.
Was he Macklin's assistant?
Yeah.
Now, this was a year before you came here, but in 1911, which was Macklin's first season, they got Macklin so late that practice already had started before Macklin got here. And I suppose Courtright was running the practice. Did you ever hear it talked about? Who was coaching the practice, or did just the players get out and work themselves?
I don't know how. He was a player, of course, just shortly before.
1909 or 10, I think he was his last season.
Was he?
Yeah, I think so. But he was here through that period.
But he was an assistant coach for a while. After I started playing, he didn't do a whole lot. There never was very much coaching between you and me. Never much. You played. If you had good instinct, you were a pretty good ball player. Mm-hmm. If you didn't have instinct. Under Macklin's system, you didn't have much.
Do you like what you see in football now? Do you like the game the way it's played now?
Oh, I do. I like it very much, but I don't... There's so many things about it that I don't like.
What, for example?
Well, the greed and the money.
Oh.
I would like to see a little more... Of course, there's a lot of boys. I don't mean that all boys. Mm-hmm. But there's so many of them. Now, we had a boy, Smith,
Gideon,
Bubba.
Oh, Bubba, yes,
To my mind, he was the poorest end I think we've ever had in football, to my mind. And there are quite a few people that played football will agree with
Well, now, what did he do that was wrong? He's certainly knocked people around sometimes.
Well, I would say this, potential. He probably had as much potential as any football player I know of anywhere. But producing, I give him the least.
I see.
Now, all he ever had to do in professional football or college football, if he went through by some mistake, he knocked quarterback down, that's all he had to do. Your announcers would talk about, and here he goes. And if you had the tapes and could listen to it, I followed him in football. I used to follow him just to find out how much he did. Boom! He'd always dig in, and I'd say, well, I guess this is a chance where he's going to try and maybe on third down with long yardage.
What do you think of George Webster?
Oh, wow, wonderful.
Wonderful player.
All turned right around.
Who were
Gideon Smith had a lot of fellows on television and radio who thought he was great. But they'd always say, well, there goes Bubba.
Yeah.
Oh, he just missed. Always. Oh, he just missed, and that's right. He'd go in there and if a 140-pound man hit him at the knees, he was out of the play. All he had to do was hit him at the knees. He'd lose his footing. He couldn't change direction because he was going so fast, and with his size, he just had no chance. And I saw him make the best play that he ever made because he stumbled. The interference was coming at him like this. He had two men ahead of the man of the ball. Bubba started in, he stumbled, and he fell, and as he fell, his big long frame, you know, he fell right in front of the men. Both the interferers fell over the top of him, and the man of the ball was practically stopped, and somebody came up and made the tackle. No gain.
That was, I think, against Ohio State.
Well, I don't know.
I think so. I think I remember seeing
but that. But that was all a mistake. He stumbled. He never in his world, never in the world, ever went after an interference. And that's one thing I criticize football today. The only thing I don't like is on your screen passes, where they form an interference, the man gets the ball, pass.
Yeah.
Interference start. You don't see anybody going in there and taking the interference. They all try to fight their way through. And what happens? The interference just keeps running, and the man on the ball just keeps running, and yeah, they make 8, 9, 10 yards. Mm-hmm. We started the season. Michigan beat us 55-7.
Mm-hmm.
We started the season. I think I was the only freshman on the football team, but I'll tell you who they had. They had Gideon Smith, they had Jerry DiPrato, they had my brother, who'd played a full year with the freshman at Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he never told Macklin he played at Penn State. Never talked about it. And there was McCurdy. Well, there was about five men who were on the team at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the season, we beat Ohio State. We beat it by the same score that Michigan beat them. We improved that much because he finally couldn't help but put them in the lineup. But they were there. Now, in the Penn State game, a fellow by the name of...
This was 1914, Penn State game?
Yeah. The track man. He was out for football.
Straight?
He was another man that Macklin missed. Weighed about 185 pounds. They put him in a guard in the Penn State game, taking the place of Vandervoort.
Mm.
He didn't know the signals. That's another thing about Macklin. He didn't have any substitutes that knew the signals or knew the plays, or ever had any coaching or anything. You'd just take a couple of boys and just hoping and praying that they wouldn't have to use them, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But they put this boy in when Penn State had the ball on about our two-foot line. First down.
Mm-hmm.
Vandervoort was hurt. They put him in there. Never been in a football game. Didn't know the signals, didn't he? And in the excitement, he jumped up and down, you know, and he says, "I'm just a substitute," he says. "Come on, right through here," you know. He was all excited.
Did they go right through?
He was so happy to have the chance to get in there,
yeah,
you see.
Uh-huh.
And sure enough, they hit right at him. He downed him, and it was him who did it. He downed him 2 yards farther back. So he got up and he jumped up again. He says, "All right, do it again." And they did it again, 2 yards farther back. And we had three downs in those days.
Yeah.
And the third down, they were stopped on the 5-yard line.
Uh-huh.
And he practically saved us in the football game.
I'll look up his name. I have some notes on that game.
I've got it.
All right. What would you say, Blake, thinking back through the years, who were some of the really great players you saw out at our place?
Well, back after my time, man under Crowley, who played left halfback.
Bobby Monette, yes,
to my mind, could have played football with with any team we had and been the star on any football. He did everything. Mm-hmm. A great offensive player, and certainly a great defensive player. And when he turned pro, he was about as good. His passing was about as good as any in the pro league with Green Bay.
Green Bay, yeah.
But he had speed. He had strength. He weighed about 178 pounds, something like that. He just had everything, to my mind. Mm-hmm. We've had some great halfbacks, some of these boys that can really go. But Bob Minette, to my mind, was a real football player.
Any particular game or games that stick out in your mind as great football games for us?
Well, of course, in my time, the great game that I think of is the one that I didn't play in was Penn State.
Penn State, uh-huh. They had just tied Harvard, I believe, who were the champions, national champions the year before.
Champions of the East.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And I would say that was...
How about of more modern times, now the last 20 years or so? Any of Biggie's wins over Notre Dame, maybe, or any of the Michigan games?
Well, Biggie had so many great wins.
Yes.
Biggie's football teams were the best football teams, of course, I think we've ever had, although...
Duffy?
Duffy had...
In the mid-60s there,
yeah.
He had two unbeaten ones in a row. And of course, Earl Morrill and the 1955 team was a great football team, too.
Of course, Duffy had a little more weight in these teams. But Munn had execution on his offense. His execution that was perfect. Beautiful. Beautiful to watch. I would like to see a team with nobody weighing over 220 pounds today, with all the speed they have in 220 pounders. I would like to see the speedy men, 220s, play against these big boys.
Yeah. You think they'd win?
Oh, would they win?
You know, Biggie built his teams on small men. We were always smaller than the opposition.
Offense like Biggie had, you know, these little halfbacks coming out of there, 165 pounds.
Yeah.
Why, they come out there and wham. Speed is what hurts. Speed is what brings it. If you haven't got speed, you're not much of a tackler. You've got to have speed enough to get your shoulder into the man.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't got that speed, you never will get in there and get him. And if it's a block, look at what's his name, our great blocker.
Coleman. Yeah.
Say he only weighed, 170 pounds.
Yeah, that's right, 178.
Greatest blocker we ever had. Yeah. Get up and make a second block.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't take... Well, it took a lot of speed and a lot of drive and determination.
You think we ought to throw the ball more?
Huh?
You think we ought to throw the ball more?
No, I don't like that too much. I think the pass is a good way to loosen up the game. But to my man, the forward pass. To a great extent, is two men, the passer and the catcher.
Mm-hmm.
But in your play, in the running game, that takes 11 men.
Yeah.
Now you can have six or seven men loafing when you're passing, and still complete your pass and do your. But you can't have six or seven men loafing if you want to have a running game.
I want to do a big switch. I want to talk a little about golf.
Yeah.
Where did you start playing golf? Back home in Tonawanda? As a kid?
No. When I became a golf professional, I really hadn't been playing golf 2 years.
Really?
And then only the last year before I became professional at the country club, I was a member.
What year is that?
Gosh, I can't tell you.
Back in the 20s, was it, or what?
I think so. About 23, something like that. China Clark knew. He was out here the other night, and he was talking about something that happened at the club. He said 23. So I figured it was around 23.
How many years were you pro?
10.
10. Did you ever play in tournaments?
Oh, yeah, I played in the Western Open.
Did you?
Times, yeah. I qualified once for the Western Open.
I see. Do you recall what kind of scores you shot?
Oh, I qualified with, I think it was a 74 up at Indian Hills or somewhere in Birmingham.
Oh.
Or somewhere in Detroit.
In Detroit. Maybe in Birmingham Country Club. It might have been.
My first day out, I had a terrible round, 82. I was not a golf professional. I mean, I'd never taken any lessons, and I never really was a golf. I didn't know very much about teaching golf because I had my own way of hitting the ball.
Was it unorthodox? Was it?
No, not unorthodox, but.
Now, you ever see a more unorthodox swing than Lyman Frimadig had?
Unorthodox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the worst looking golf swing I've ever seen. But he could hit the ball pretty well with it, too.
Yeah, yeah. Lyman hit the ball pretty well. But I could always hit my tee shots accurately. And
distance.
And good distance.
Good distance.
Yeah. My number three wood was the choice wood. I could do anything with a three wood. Mm-hmm. Of course, in those days, when I started playing golf, I think I had four irons and a couple of woods.
They were wood shafts. Wood shafts, I suppose, weren't they?
Yeah, wood shafts. But I played a lot of golf when I was pro. I wasn't busy. Nobody wanted lessons, and the only lessons I gave practically were those that I gave in groups. Every week, I'd take a group of children and the wives, I'd give the wives a group lesson and give the children, and they'd come out. Boy, they'd come out strong for those. But they wouldn't come out and pay money for And I don't blame them because I don't think I could have. Oh, I probably could have helped them some, but I mean.
And then from there you went.
I wasn't qualified.
From there you went to Oldsmobile, huh?
No, I went into the insurance business.
Insurance business, I see. And then later on, you went to work for Oldsmobile.
I went to Oldsmobile during the war. And I stayed there for 13 years.
Say, we had a golf course right there on the campus. You used to play that? When was that built? What year?
Well, I don't know. All I remember is seeing some fellas out there, and I used to call it shinny. they'd be out there with some kind of clubs, knocking this.
Yeah, along the what were the big parking lot?
But it wasn't. Now. It wasn't a golf course. It was just a field. That's all.
Well, they had little what passed for greens on it, didn't they?
No, they didn't have anything.
They didn't.
No.
I thought they had nine.
Not
holes.
That I ever remember anything in the way of a green or anything. Just went out at a kind of a pasture. And they may have put a tin can or something down there.
I see.
There was no.
And then when we built the stadium, that knocked the little golf course out. Then they became the Intercity, didn't they? Is that the name of it? Intercity.
That was East Lansing. That was what's now.
It's now the Walnut Hills.
Walnut Hills.
Yeah, they moved out there. Yeah.
And I suppose that, but that didn't seem to.
That was the first touchdown that State ever made against Michigan.
Yeah, I was a freshman. My first game.
That was 1912.
That was the first football game.
Was that in 12?
Mm-hmm. And it was an intercepted pass, I think. About 60-yard run.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And but I didn't. I'd just like to tell you my background. My brother's back.
All right.
A little bit.
Yes.
I don't want you to use.